from Radio Vermont, it's the Dave Graham Show on WDEV. It's your show about the people, places, and the issues that matter the most to you. Now here's your host, Dave Graham.
Good morning, Vermont. It is Wednesday, January the 8th, 2020. So glad to have you with us this morning. We are going to focus pretty much the entire Dave Graham Show here today on the situation in the Middle East, where last evening, Iran fired missiles at U.S. military bases in Iraq in retaliation for the killing of last week of General Qasem Soleimani, the number two official, as he's described, in Iran. And this has, of course, caused a lot of outrage in Iran and elsewhere in the Middle East. There was talk possibly a couple days ago of the United States being, well, the United States actually has been asked by the Iraqi parliament to pull out of that country. And we're going to get an update on the situation here with a new friend. Axios.com is an excellent online news site which serves up a really comprehensive daily report on the top stories of the day. It's well worth a visit. They do so in a style which is very accessible and is not super dense. You can count yourself well informed, even if you're in a hurry. And they do a great job. And so we've got the world editor of Axios on the line with us this morning to kick us off, and that is Dave Lawler. Good morning, Dave.
Great to be with you. Good morning.
And give us an update here. Now we had these how many missiles were fired by Iran? Do we know?
We had approximately 15 missiles, was what the Pentagon was saying immediately after the attack, 11 of which, I believe, hit two air bases in Iraq. Most of them hit Al-Asad Air Base, which is a large air base used by the U.S. in the west of the country. But currently, the U.S. has not reported any casualties. So when I was covering this live as it happened last night, and it looked like this could be a very significant escalation from Iran. It looks slightly less severe at the moment, but we still don't have the full facts.
Now, do you think that there was any, punch pulling here? Were they trying to miss, or was it just pure luck that there were no casualties, or how are people reading this thing?
So Iraq has said that they got a heads up before this happened, shortly after midnight, which would have been an hour before Iran launched the missiles. They got a heads up that our retaliation is starting. The U.S. has said that they put all of these bases on high alert and took necessary precautions ahead of time. So the U.S. would have had 5 days since the strike on Soleimani to consider how to protect its troops at bases like this. So it's very difficult to divine Iranian motives here, but I think you could make the case that this was a big, forceful-looking response. Iran taking direct action, not going through its proxies, using its military, launching from Iran into Iraq, and yet they probably could have calculated that this would not be, certainly not as destructive as if they had done it in the immediate aftermath when you would have had more troops exposed to these missiles. But, it's hard to say that you can calculate that you won't hurt or kill anyone when you're launching this many ballistic missiles at air bases. But they must have had some calculation of the fact that if they were to strike directly at a number of U.S. troops, the U.S. response would have been swift and quite forceful. So there was some punch pulling probably on the Iranian side.
And I mean, it's interesting to me that I think they were under some domestic internal pressure, really, to do some kind of a show of force here, to send a shot across the bow of the United States, perhaps, and to say, we're not going to take the death of Soleimani lying down. And yet, this seems like it might be, if cooler heads prevail and so on, a place to call it off.
Right. So Iran has been projecting itself as a regional power in the Middle East. It's difficult to do that if you allow your best known internationally. The supreme leader, the Ayatollah, is perhaps better known, internationally. But in countries around the region, Soleimani was really sort of a celebrity general. He was a very well-known figure, a revered commander. So to have him killed and not hit back would have been really untenable for Iran. So they have now done something. They had the supreme leader in the command center last night as this attack happened. In terms of the domestic political picture here, they clearly are posturing that this was a very strong, forceful response that shows that Iran is a power. And in fact, Iran's media has been claiming a number of U.S. casualties. That doesn't seem to be true, but that's what they're telling their people. So you're right that this is something that they needed to do. They obviously calculated that they needed to do both for the Iranian public, but also for the publics around the region to show that they're not going to take this lying down. But, you know, President Trump came out after this, said all is well. He's obviously seeing the reports that this was not as destructive as was feared originally. Iran's signaling has been that they're basically ready to keep this up if the U.S. retaliates, but they're done, at least militarily, you know, for the time being. So if President Trump comes out with his statement, which we're expecting sometime this morning, and says, you know, this was something that we can essentially accept from Iran or some version of that, then you may actually see these missile strikes last night be the thing that kind of generates an off-ramp for both sides.
Yeah. Well, I think most folks have a, including myself, I'll confess a little bit of a bias here, an interest in keeping the peace around the world. And so let's hope so. I mean, right. It's just right. it would be a way to get this over with and return to some maybe something a little closer to normalcy, whatever that is these days. And I wonder if your sense of how this plays politically in the United States, as things stand now, let's assume both sides take the off ramps and this thing is basically over. Is this a win for President Trump?
So it's very interesting to see how this is playing on Fox News, which is obviously where President Trump consumes a lot of his news. Last night you had, in the immediate wake of the Iranian attack, you had Sean Hannity and other Fox News personalities saying, you know, Iran doesn't know what it's getting itself into here. They're going to hit back hard. But you also have other voices on that network who basically say one of the things we like about President Trump is that he doesn't want to get us involved in these quagmires in the Middle East. You know, he said Iraq was the biggest mistake ever. He wants to pull out of Syria. He'd like to pull troops back. And so this might be an opportunity to do that. So there may be sort of an angel on one shoulder and a devil on the other, depending on which, depending on what you personally think is the right response here. But, I think President Trump can now point to the fact that the U.S. has killed what it viewed as, you know, a singular menace in the Middle East, somebody who had American blood on his hands, somebody who, you know, whether he was planning an imminent attack on the U.S. or not, certainly, you know, was coordinating in ways that would hurt U.S. interests in the Middle East. He is off the battlefield. And if Trump can say all we had to pay in return were these strikes that didn't kill any Americans, you know, that's a trade I'm willing to make. Now, I am not sure we've heard the last from Iran or its proxies here. I mean, Iran can tend to take its time and in retaliating for things, and there are things they can do in the cyber realm. There are things they can do through their proxies in other countries around the region. And yet, I think President Trump may be in a position here where he can sell the immediate aftermath of this as a win. Now, that depends on whether he comes out this morning and says it's over or says there's further action to come.
Now, assuming that this is sort of the end of, direct confrontational hostilities or whatever, firing missiles at each other, let's put it that way. Assuming that, what does it mean for the Iranian-U.S. relationship going forward? How will this thing sort of settle down back into some kind of a day-to-day, what feels like a status quo?
So there are two tracks in which there's escalation between Iran and the United States. One is the, as you mentioned, the missiles, the military hostilities. The other is the nuclear dimension, and that is something that we're going to have to watch, because President Trump has said for quite a while now that what he really wants here is a big new nuclear deal with Iran that also constrains them on other fronts. That seems incredibly, incredibly unlikely given the current, escalation and also the fact that this is an election year and every other reason. Nothing points toward a big Iran-U.S. handshake sometime this year that says, you know, basically we're done with this whole standoff. But, if Iran does fully leave the nuclear deal, as they've signaled that they will, the Obama-era nuclear deal, that is another area where there's going to be further confrontation between the U.S. and Iran. So you could see the current simmering. I mean, obviously, we've been talking about the threat of war for the last few days, right? So if that calms down, I think that's good news for everyone. Mm-hmm. But then we'll still have to watch what Iran does on the nuclear front.
And one last question for you in terms of the back to the politics and kind of the domestic implications of this in the United States. I have a good friend who's a strong supporter of President Trump. And one of the things he's been saying for the past couple of years is, no new oil wars. We haven't, President Trump isn't doing this. And I sent him a note yesterday where I basically said, well, if there's no new oil wars, he's kind of throwing a match at a simmering one. This, of course, was before last night's missile firing by Iran. Can the Democrats, do the Democrats have a leg to stand on here if they want to start criticizing? I mean, obviously they want to criticize, they're running to replace him this year. And do they have something to stand on in which they could basically say, here's somebody who's promised to disentangle us from the Middle East in particular. And yet this doesn't look like any move toward disentanglement. How does that whole argument stand now?
Well, it depends where you sit in the Democratic primary, right? I think we saw Bernie Sanders this week point to the fact that Joe Biden had voted for the Iraq War and he, labeled him as a champion of that war, essentially, which, a lot of what we're seeing in the Middle East today can be tied back to the decision to invade Iraq in 2003. So, there is certainly a debate on the Democratic side as to whether we should really pull back from this sort of military presence, particularly in the Middle East, but around the world, or if we should have the kind of conventional foreign policy that Biden and probably Pete Buttigieg are, are advocating. But from Trump's perspective, it's really an interesting one, right? Because I covered the 2016 campaign. And he went to rallies and he basically said, you can't trust the rest of these Republicans because these are the same people who sold you the Iraq War, who've been, wasting trillions of dollars in the Middle East and don't know what they're doing. And Trump certainly risked when he made the decision to strike Soleimani another war in the Middle East. Now that it looks like we might not end up in that direction, but that was certainly a foreseeable consequence of that decision. And so he is playing with fire in a way as somebody who has advocated for getting out of the Middle East. He, certainly risked getting us much, much more deeply involved. But as to how it plays in November, I guess we'll have to see what happens in the coming weeks and months.
Well, yeah, there's plenty to come. That is for sure. And Dave Lawler, the world editor of Axios.com, I want to thank you so much for joining me this morning. It's good talking with you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All righty. Hey, we are just want to open the phone lines here and see whether any listeners out there have any thoughts they'd like to share about this situation. Are we in a place of stasis now? Can we sort of stand down on what looked like it might be a march to war last few days? Maybe it was just a matter of one shot from the United States, got the Soleimani guy and a few shots from Iran and got nobody. Let's call it off, folks. It was just a brief dust up, or is there more to come? We don't know. 244-1777 is the local number here in Waterbury, and it's always always great to hear from the listeners to the Dave Graham Show out there. I think that we are in a situation right now where it's very hard to tell, obviously, what's to come next. I think this is a great place if the Iranians and President Trump decide that we can call it off now and say, Let's just get ourselves into a thing where this is in the past. That would be the ideal situation here, I suppose, because obviously I don't think anybody on either side wants a full-blown war between the United States and Iran. And there is a there's just a lot to think about, though, going forward. I mean, as Dave Lawler, the world editor with Axios, was just telling us, there's a continuing sort of simmering confrontation with Iran over what remaining terms of the nuclear agreement entered into several years ago now by President Obama and Iran remain on the table, remain in force. Iran has basically was saying the other day that it is going to be pulling back further from an agreement that President Trump already announced for public consumption that the United States was disavowing. That this was a couple of years ago now. And we are now into a situation where we have to, the United States and Iran have to figure out their relationship going forward. The I'm not an expert by any means on military policy or Middle Eastern policy of the United States, but just a sort of a Joe consumer out there, Joe member of the public, try to be an informed citizen about this stuff. But it is obviously something that is going to be, in one way or another, on our plates for a while in terms of things we need to think about. And we are happy to hear from our listeners out there if they can join us. And it looks like we have somebody calling in now. Let's see who this is. I'm expecting that Peter Henney, a professor from the University of Vermont, will be joining us shortly. And he is has made a study of these issues, and we're hoping that we can get him on our air. Right now we have Jeff from Moncton calling in. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to make a couple of points. You know, people are out here, you know, saying that, oh, President Trump is just starting this and he's trying to start a war and unprovoked and blah, blah, blah. Okay, May of 2019, Iraq attacked an oil tanker in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
June of 19, Iraq shot down one of our drones. July of 19, Iran seized a British oil tanker. Okay, September, they attacked the Saudi oil base. The people that are out there saying that President Trump did this unprovoked, Soleimani was behind every single one of these attacks. For people to say that he's doing this unprovoked is ridiculous. Whether you approve of it or not, I mean, I am a Trump supporter, but I do not approve. I don't want to go to war. I don't think it's necessary. But I'm also not going to say that it was not unnecessary to take this guy out. And I think people need to stop, you know, saying that this was unprovoked and this was just him trying to take pressure off the stuff going on currently, you know, in-house. People need to open their eyes and see that this wasn't unprovoked.
Okay.
You know, this was a direct, you know, hey,
yep.
You know, you need to stop and we're going to put a stop to you.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jeff. Appreciate it. Let's go to Peter Henney. He's a professor at the University of Vermont and is joining us on the line this morning. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
And tell me your assessment of the current situation vis-a-vis the United States and Iran. Are we? I was just talking with a world editor at Axios.com, Dave Lawler, who was saying that the current situation seems to present sort of off-ramps for both sides, that maybe we don't need to escalate further.
Yeah, I think so, right? So Trump tweeted last night, said all is well, right? But basically indicating there probably are no casualties, U.S. casualties from the Iranian attack. Iran noted this morning, like, this was our response,
mm-hmm.
right? Suggesting maybe there's not more coming. And both sides maybe just stop and take a breath and think, right? Because no one really wants war here. Iran definitely doesn't, because they would lose. I don't think Trump and the Trump administration wants war, right? They probably want regime change in Iran, but they'd rather not do it through a brutal war. So yeah, there's a chance here for everyone to kind of calm down and hopefully, you know, step back, because this could easily spin out of control.
And we just had a caller on the line making the point that he doesn't believe that anybody should be calling this action by President Trump of last week, you know, taking out Qasem Soleimani, the Iranian general, unprovoked. I don't think I've used that word on the air, but I mean, my only point that I've been making is that it does seem to run counter to the idea of getting oneself disentangled from the Middle East, which is what President Trump campaigned on and what he has talked about earlier in his term for sure. So tell us, I mean, do you agree with our caller who was just on a few minutes ago, Jeff Monckton, that should not be labeled unprovoked, what the president did?
I didn't hear all of what he said. You know, in terms of unprovoked, well, sure, it was provoked, right? Iran was organizing these protests, in quotes, against the U.S. embassy. You know, they've been launching rocket attacks against bases. That's not the question, though. The question is, should we have responded? Right, because obviously I think it pisses people off for Iran to mess with us, and I think that's fair.
Yep.
But getting angry is not a good basis for a foreign policy. And that's what's concerning about this whole attack on Soleimani, the killing. Based on what we've gotten out of the White House, it seems like Trump did this kind of impulsively. And, you know, Soleimani was a bad guy. The Islamic Republic of Iran is not, they're not a good regime, and I don't like them. But we have to kind of think through the implications of everything we do, and this... Even if it doesn't lead to war, it will necessitate a continued U.S. presence in the Middle East.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the one of the things I read the other day about Qasem Soleimani is that there is a strong and this is your field. I know you've made a major study in your academic career of the role of religion in politics and so on. Talk to us a little bit about what his sort of religious affiliation. I mean, I know he's Islamic, but I mean, why there would be a religious flavor to, if it were a U.S. senior defense official or something who were assassinated effectively, there might not be to the same extent.
Yeah, you know, I don't know Soleimani's personal piety, but he's part of this Islamic Republic, which is basically they have an elected president and parliament, but the real power lies with this supreme leader, this religious leader, who controls the judiciary and the military. And Soleimani was part of this, you know, Islamic Revolutionary Guard, specifically a paramilitary unit. And so their goal is to defend the revolution, the Islamic Revolution, basically abroad by, you could say, exporting it, but really just trying to keep Iran's enemies off balance and their allies powerful. And so there is a bit of a religious justification and legitimacy to what they do. It's not like they're acting based on the Quran or their beliefs, but a lot of their foreign policies and domestic policies are cloaked in kind of religious legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can increase some of the significance of that. That being said, though, I mean, if you could imagine, you know, General Petraeus being assassinated, there would be a pretty huge, he's had some issues since he was, commanding our troops, but you imagine a huge outpouring of anger in America, even without some official religious legitimacy behind it.
But yeah, I mean, I think you're right about that. I'm not sure it takes on the, I mean, you would know better than I, but whether it takes on the same degree of fervor or whatever. I mean, the crowds at the demonstration at the funeral on Monday in Tehran were just remarkable. I mean, that was like yikes, a lot of people very very upset, as I saw, you know, a lot of comments online just looking at the crowd pictures and saying it's kind of scary to have all these people so mad at us and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, we have to remember Iran is a kind of a repressive regime, and what we see on the streets is not necessarily reflective of the people.
Yeah.
The Iranian people are not all, you know, completely behind this regime. We actually had pretty widespread protests throughout Iran up until recently because people are sick of the way the regime is working. Of course, assassinating, you know, one of their top generals might make them more sympathetic to the regime.
Do you think going forward there is a chance that we can get back onto some kind of a steady and, you know, somewhat peaceful footing with Iran, or are we going to be, is this going to be sort of a festering sore in foreign policy for years to come?
Yeah, it depends on how far you want to go with that, right? So if you're thinking of, you know, are we going to become close allies? Probably not. Even if you had a reformist, well, we have a reformist president, have had a reformist president in Iran, there's still a big difference in worldview and this history of antagonism. But we did get to this point under President Obama where we had a nuclear deal in place It was far from perfect. It did not address Iran's human rights abuses or its various kind of meddling in the region, but it did take the nuclear issue off the table, and that worked. Now, if Iran's going to trust us again after we pulled out of it, I don't know. I think Trump is envisioning a sort of North Korea sit-down, but of course, as we saw with North Korea, that didn't work out well either, because it wasn't accompanied by kind of real intensive diplomacy. So yeah, it's possible. I think it's hard to imagine under this administration, though.
Yeah. Well, Peter Henney of the University of Vermont, I want to thank you so much for joining me this morning. It's always good talking with you, and I'm hoping we'll do so again soon.
Great, thanks.
All righty. Hey, we're going to go to the bottom of the hour break for some CBS News here on the Dave Graham Show, and we'll be back in a few minutes, folks.
The Warren Store is a warm and welcoming oasis during the winter. Our wood stove is roaring, the aromas of fresh-made soups and our daily specials fill the air, the coffee is hot and the pastries are fresh. Stop by for breakfast before you hit the slopes or make us your après-ski choice to relax and refuel after a day of fun on the mountain. And we have a great selection of grab-and-go meals if you can stay and chat, but we hope that you can stick around. The Warren Store. We're funky, friendly, and almost world famous.
Now back to the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM.
And yes, we are back. The Dave Graham Show continues here on this Wednesday morning. We are juggling lots of things this morning, including this huge news out of the Middle East, where the Iranians responded to the attack last week by the United States that killed top general Qasem Soleimani by firing a bunch of missiles, about 15 or 20 missiles we're getting from various reports from Iranian territory at U.S. military bases in Iraq. So far, the United States is reporting zero casualties. We can be thankful for that. And Iraq is essentially saying, it sounds like they are saying, that was our shot, we're done, effectively, at least for now. And we'll see what the response from the United States is. President Trump is to address the nation in a statement to be issued later this morning around 11 a.m., we are told. So just after the close of the Dave Graham Show here at WDEV, our stations will be carrying that set of remarks from the president live. And so stay with us for that. I think we're going to be running that right around 11 a.m. and then start a little bit later on the normal 11 a.m. start of the Bill Sayers Common Sense Radio program. So anyway, lots breaking here, folks, and also some callers who want to weigh in here. Fred's been patient for a while. Let's get Fred on the line. Good morning.
When you talk about a full-blown war, I'm wondering what you're talking about. My definition of a full-blown war is there'll be boots on the ground, the Air Force will be overhead, and the Navy will be offshore, and that's never going to happen.
Well,
this will happen?
I you know what, Fred? I hope I can agree with you. who knows? I mean,
if that was going to happen, there'd be a coup d'etat in Washington, and there'd be tanks going down Pennsylvania Avenue.
I doubt that. I think that's going too far. I think the idea of a full blown war, as you describe, if you told me a week and a half ago. That we were going to launch a missile attack at the Baghdad airport that was aimed at taking out this senior Iranian official, this top general Soleimani. I would have said, I probably would have said, well, under normal circumstances, I don't believe it. With the current leadership in Washington, anything's possible.
What's your definition of a full-blown war?
My definition of a full-blown war, I think you've got it pretty much, you know. I mean,
that's right. I agree with you 100% because you agree with me, of course. But yeah. Anyways, it's not going to happen. It's not worth it. The president would be thrown out of office the next day.
I don't think that I have predicted a full-blown war here. I mean, I've been talking so far this morning about this exchange, you know, this firing of missiles in response to the attack on Soleimani that killed him. The missile firing allowed Iran to sort of rattle its swords a little bit and maybe take care of some domestic pressure over there politically, within Iran itself, and And I've been talking about off ramps, so I'm hoping that they take the off ramps. That's
yeah. So the president will say, yeah, let's talk.
I don't know what the president will say again because that would be the
obvious thing I would say. See, oh, let's talk.
Yeah,
and we can get this thing worked out.
Right.
I mean, the president really doesn't want to have a full-blown war because he'd be kicked out of office.
Well, we'll see. Hey, Fred, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Forbes in East Corinth. Good morning, Forbes.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Yes. I don't know. As far as what I can see, we got two choices here. Do this about the same thing we did in Europe, First and Second World War, and that's stay out of it until millions have been killed, and then finally they start to affect us. And England, of course, came in and begged us to help.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got involved in it, fresh as a daisy, and off we went. Or deal with the issue. The issue isn't new. This has been going on in different parts of the world through their influence for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And the really interesting thing is China and Russia at this point. I haven't heard anything from them. I'm wondering what their take is on it.
I could only imagine they're kind of sitting back looking at this and chuckling.
Yeah, so those are our two options, I see. Wait till most of the Middle East is involved in the largest war in the world, and then we can come in again clean as a whistle with all our factories uninhibited, and we get into it again, or deal with it now. I don't have enough information on it.
Yeah, I guess the difference I see between the current situation in the Middle East and what happened in Europe, say toward the end of the 1930s, it's not as extreme, is it? I mean, we're not talking about we don't have anything like, you know, the early stages of the Holocaust going on in the Middle East right now, we don't have Iranian tanks rolling into Iraq right now the way we German tanks rolled into Poland in 1939, and so I'm not sure I buy the analogy, Forbes, unless I'm missing something.
Well, we're a little more sophisticated today with our weaponry,
and, yeah,
so that would be an entirely different war.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. More instrumentation than people.
Yeah, sure.
Just within their own country, some of their, it wasn't too long ago, they had people marching in protest there, and apparently, I don't know for sure, that quite a few of them were annihilated within their own country as far as opposing the regime. But I don't know. It's a real can of worms, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Forbes, thank you so much for the call. Let's talk soon. And, this is really... very interesting stuff going on. Do we still have Peter Henney on the line? No, we don't. No. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm a little confused on the lineup here this morning because it's coming to me pretty fresh. You know, we had a whole row of guests all set up for today, and then suddenly the news happened, broke last night, and we decided we were going to shake it all up and try something completely different. Just wanted to mention a couple things we have coming up on the Dave Graham Show. Bob Ney is going to be joining us a little bit after the top of the hour. He's a favorite guest of ours, and also is somebody who's actually spent time in Iran and so knows that part of the world quite well, and we'll be very interested to talk with Bob. Let's go to Steve Dorsey from CBS News and find out a little bit more about how all this is playing in Washington. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning.
And tell me a little bit about what people in Washington are saying now this morning in terms of is this being perceived as a win for President Trump, or is there a feeling that the president will say, okay, that's it, we're done, off ramps for both the U.S. and Iran, or where are we going with this?
Well, I think there's optimism that perhaps this is, as you said, an off ramp to de-escalate this conflict. Mm-hmm. Between the U.S. and Iran, especially with reports that Iran had given U.S. military forces in Iraq a heads up that they were launching this strike, that apparently it hit empty fields. There doesn't seem to be any U.S. reports of casualties or really even significant damage that we've heard of. So that's the optimism there. However, it's possible that there could be some kind of U.S. response to this. It could be something that might not be military action per se, but could be a cyber action. There could be new sanctions, perhaps even consequences diplomatically, something to the U.N. perhaps. But this is something we'll likely learn about more from the president's address at 11 o'clock in an hour and 15 minutes from the White House.
Could there be, I mean, just as another option, sort of both sides saying, let's call it even and be done?
Well, that's what Iran's foreign minister tweeted last night, mm-hmm. saying that this concludes their response to Soleimani's death, and that the U.S. doesn't, Iran does not want to escalate this into a war, but it's prepared to defend itself. So perhaps that could be what the U.S. had been pushing for.
Yeah, let's hope there's no further escalation. Nobody really wants to go to war, I don't think, on either side. So now let's talk about the politics in Washington a little bit. Obviously, we have this backdrop of the impeachment debate going on. And do you think that, let's assume for the moment that things calm down on the international front, that we are not going to war with Iran, what kind of an impact will this have, if any, on that whole discussion?
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of discussion about the U.S. Policy towards Iran in Congress play out. Mm-hmm. Because they're pushing, especially Democrats, for more involvement, more consultation before any U.S. military action against Iran. This will likely continue to play out with Nancy Pelosi taking the lead on this. And also as about 1 p.m. today, we expect briefings for the Senate and the House by top Trump administration officials on the intelligence that led up to the attack on Soleimani, and also the U.S. response to these rocket attacks.
And then the on impeachment per se, I'm wondering, the latest news yesterday where Mitch McConnell said, I have the votes to write the rules with no help from Democrats for a Senate trial. But it still all depends. I mean, the real stumbling block still remains at the House actually sending the articles of impeachment over to the Senate. Is that correct?
Yeah. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's not going to do that until she sees that the resolution that Mitch McConnell says he has the votes for, 51 all Republican votes, to lay out the procedure for this Senate trial. He says it's following a precedent in 1999 during the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton. However, we haven't seen much developments yet today in that realm on Capitol Hill.
And is the resolution, I mean, do we know its contents yet? Is he still saying no witnesses, or where are we on that?
Well, he says they want to save the perhaps the middle, the biggest questions for the trial, for the meat of the trial, and this is just a way to begin organizing a trial to begin in the Senate. He hasn't answered the questions definitively yet about whether or not there will be a compromise with Democrats to include more witnesses, including John Bolton, and also more evidence and documents that Democrats have been pushing for.
Now, Bolton is, of course, out saying he's willing to come in if he is subpoenaed to testify in front of the Senate. Can he do that, or is there an ability by the president to block him if the president wants to assert executive privilege on a former employee?
Well, that's the question that still hasn't been resolved yet between the legislative branch and the executive branch, and it's something that's being considered by the judicial branch at the moment, but it's not something that will likely be resolved really anytime soon.
But I mean, Bolton's a private citizen now. Could he, this may be kind of crazy, but could he just sort of show up and say, you know, I've made a decision that I'm willing to testify. I've subpoenaed, they subpoenaed me, I'm here, and you know, the president doesn't really have control over me anymore. Or could he be somehow prevent, you know, maybe physically prevented from coming to the Capitol?
Well, maybe the compromise there is that he's allowed to testify but can't testify about his work for the Trump administration, which would be essentially covered under executive privilege if the president deems that so. And then what's the point of John Bolton testifying at all?
Yeah, because
we don't care about the latest book he's writing. You know, we care about his involvement in the Ukraine call and the concerns that he allegedly had in how the president was dealing with a back channel to Ukraine.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen some speculation that Bolton wants to be able to include material in the book that he would feel more comfortable making public if we're already the subject of congressional testimony. Is there any sort of publication strategy going on here?
Yeah, there could be, and I don't doubt we'll see in a publication of details of his time in the White House.
Okay, so one last question about Bolton. What if the House subpoenas him? Will he testify in front of one of the House committees?
It's possible. However, you know, they've already concluded their role in the impeachment. Now, they could subpoena him under different areas of oversight of the executive branch of presidential power, but I think that's more likely a Senate thing now.
All right. Well, we'll see what comes. Hey, I want to thank you very much for joining us, Steve Dorsey of CBS, and we'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Happy to do it. Thank you.
All righty. More of the Dave Graham Show. We 244-1777 if you want to weigh in here in the last few minutes of this first hour of the program this morning. Once again, just a couple of upcoming programming notes, I guess I'll call them, after the top of the hour news from CBS, we will be talking with Bob Ney, a good friend of the Dave Graham Show. Well, he used to be with Talk Media News. He's freelancing these days. But one key thing about Bob, very insightful guy, a former Republican congressman from Ohio who got swept up in that Jack Abramoff lobbying scandal back in the early part of the first decade of the new millennium, shall we say. Sometime back around 2003 or 4 or somewhere in there, I think is when all that unfolded. Bob Ney ended up going to federal prison, and so he has seen life from the, you'd say, pretty near the top. Being a member of Congress is a pretty exalted position in life if you just compare it to the sort of average American walks of life. And then pretty near the bottom, when you are in federal prison, you're not, I'm sure, having a whole lot of fun from day to day. So that is... That's quite a range of perspectives for one individual in life, and I think he brings some of the insight from those experiences to our conversations here on the Dave Graham Show on WDEV. He's also spent some time back in Iran earlier in his career, and we're going to talk with him about that and just about how he thinks the Iranian culture is responding to the current situation between Iran and the United States. I want to ask him if Iranians will be satisfied that their leadership sort of took, you know, fired a shot across the bow of the United States last night with these missile attacks, apparently non-lethal missile attacks on U.S. air bases in Iraq. So that'll be, I think, an interesting conversation. The other good reason to stay tuned to WDEV FM at AM this morning is that at about 11 o'clock, the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, will be making a statement about how he sees the current situation between the United States and Iran. And after all, the current sort of heated situation started last week with, on the order of the president, a missile attack on the near the Baghdad airport where the attack was on Qasem Soleimani, senior Iranian general, and people tell us number two power in that government, really, the Tehran-based government, was in Baghdad, and the United States fired this missile that killed him. And, of course, that has set up days now of consternation, a very a great deal of rage in Iran itself. And, you know, here in the United States, a number of people on cable TV and just online and in conversations on the street and so on, sort of saying, oh, my word, what are we doing? Are we heading into a war with this Middle Eastern country that is nowhere near as powerful as the United States, but also is not it's not a nothing power. They have some military tools at their disposal. They have quite a bit of assets in terms of an ability to project power in ways large and small outside of their borders throughout the Middle East. There's talk that Iran has quite a skilled core of people who understand cyber warfare and attacking computer networks and that sort of thing. So, you know, could Iran retaliate somehow in that way? So far, as of last night, I think a lot of folks are kind of regarding the score as even now. The United States took out this one Iranian general. Iran fired some missiles, which didn't end up killing anybody on the United States side, but still were, as Iran called them, a slap in the face to the United States by virtue of just having bombs land on your airbase, that is definitely a time to seek shelter and worry about what you need to do to protect yourself. So thankfully, the U.S. military folks over there in Iraq were ready for incoming, and they were able to avoid any casualties, and at least as far as we understand from the current reports out of the Pentagon. So we have lots to talk about here on the Dave Graham Show. And coming up to the top of the hour now, we'll have some of our regular CBS News, which I'm sure will provide an update on some of these situations I've been talking about here. And then we'll have our conversation with Bob Ney to follow all of that. And should be a rollicking second hour of the Dave Graham Show. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention is that we've also got a good show lined up tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Lisa Senecal, the chair of the Vermont Commission on Women, as well as Carrie Brown, the executive director of the Vermont Commission on Women. And they're going to be talking to us about some recent developments relating to some legislation on sexual harassment in the state. They're going to be talking to us about some work being done by a group called Vermont Works for Women. It'll be an interesting conversation of the two of them. They've been guests on the program before, and I really enjoy having them in and hope the listeners do as well. We are, as I say, just about a minute to go before the top of the hour break here on the Dave Graham Show. Hey, I wanted to issue a reminder also about our podcast. Don't forget about our podcast. If you miss, you can't listen between 9 and 11 a.m. weekday mornings when we are live here on WDEV. You can always go to WDEVradio.com, and you can check out, just follow the link from there to the Dave Graham Show. Scroll down a little bit, come up with a list of our recent programs by topic and by guest name, and you'll be able to figure out what am I wanting to listen to first. Thank the Warren Store, the friendly, funky, and almost world-famous Warren Store for their sponsorship of the podcast. Top of the hour break for news. We'll be back, folks.
The Warren Store is a warm and welcoming oasis during the winter. Our wood stove is roaring, the aromas of fresh-made soups and our daily specials fill the air, the coffee is hot, and the pastries are fresh. Stop by for breakfast before you hit the slopes, or make us your après-ski choice to relax and refuel after a day of fun on the mountain. And we have a great selection of grab-and-go meals if you can stay and chat, but we hope that you can stick around. The Warren Store. We're funky, friendly, and almost world-famous.
News Radio, WDEV, FM, and AM. Now back to the Dave Graham Show.
Continuing into our second hour on this January 8th, Wednesday morning, second day of the session in Montpelier, the resumed session, the second half of the biennium at the Vermont Legislature. Lots of stuff going on there. I want to mention that I will be over in Montpelier on Friday morning, broadcasting live from our usual spot right outside the State House cafeteria. I'm already busy trying to line up some legislators to stop by and chat with us about what they're working on as the 2019, I'll get my numbers right. Which century are we in, Dana? Which millennium? Can you help me out here? Okay, Dave. Hey, I know I'm getting old and everything, but I was not alive, don't worry, in 1919 or 1920. 2019, 2020, the session of the legislature enters its second half this week. It started yesterday, and as I was trying to say, we are going to be there on Friday broadcasting live from the State House, catching up with goings-on in Montpelier, so looking forward to that. Meanwhile, back to our Wednesday morning show here on January 8th, and I believe we have Bob Ney on the line with us this morning. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, Dave.
Hey, we were talking the other day, and you were reminding me that you were you have had experience in Iran. Tell us what you were doing over there, how long you were there, and talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. My sister took in a younger child from Iran, and he came over, and so I ended up learning Farsi, and then at Ohio State, we had 3,500 Iranian students. And some of my roommates were Iranian. So when I graduated, I had a teaching degree, couldn't find a job here in America. So I flew to Tehran and got a job. And it was wonderful. I taught Iranians English It was great, and about a month after I arrived, there were the beginnings of the revolution. It was 1978. So I stayed as long as I could, and then finally our schools were closed, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And around July or August of 78, I was forced to leave Iran. So, but it was an interesting day because that was a part of my life. And then later in my life, what ends up happening, I get to Congress, and then I also had a role with predominantly Congressman Dick Snyder, a Democratic member from Arkansas, but also Ron Paul, everybody knows that name, and Dennis Kucinich and some others. But Dick Snyder and I in particular, we were part of a back channel for both the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, sort of a back channel with Iran on issues that those presidencies needed to be involved with or start.
I've heard that term back channel many times, but I'm still a little hazy. How does that work? What do you actually do if you're part of a back channel?
Well, most of it's done in secret. Let me give you the best example, because you know the foreign minister, Zarif, who's the head guy now. You know, he's mm-hmm. making the tweets, Javad Zarif. Well, at one point in time, when the Iraq War started, there was a private deal with Zarif, who was then ambassador to the United Nations. And he talked to the Ayatollah Khamenei, the grand supreme leader, into a deal. And what America was asking was, when we went to the Iraq war, if our pilots and our planes were shot down, will you give medical care to the pilots if they're shot down, landed in Iranian soil? Can you give medical care to them, return them and the equipment to us? And the Iranians said, yes, it's a big deal.
Wow.
You know, that was a big deal. Well, somebody in the State Department got the bright idea to sabotage the entire deal, which they did. So we got a call through the White House, Secretary of State's all the same, please, please, can you go to New York? Congressman Snyder, a Democrat, and myself went to New York, sat with Javad Zarif, had dinner with him, spent about 2 or 3 hours, and the deal was back on. Now, that wasn't in the paper. That's a back-channel deal.
Yeah.
Madeleine Albright and I went to the United Nations, and we stood up and were recognized when the new president, Khamenei, was there. The best one, though, and you'll get a kick out of this one, the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament, Karoubi, is walking through the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York at the time. This is years back.
Mm-hmm.
And Arlen Specter, Senator, and a few Democrats, a few Republicans, and myself, we were coincidentally, in quotes, walking through seeing the Persian art exhibit. And guess who all met in one room?
Wow. Did. Yeah.
Okay. That was completely staged, completely planned. We had a rabbi with us. Everything was, it was all planned.
Nice and bumping into you folks.
That
yeah.
Is a back channel. That's a back channel.
That sounds like, wow, that's interesting. And obviously, a lot of times for public consumption, for those even who keep up with reading the New York Times and the Washington Post, et cetera, you see one layer of the cake, and it sounds like you were basically playing in a different layer there.
Well, and also, Dave, what happens, you're going to see it with all that's going on now, when some things do get exposed, how could you members go dare talk to those people, Well, White House wants it done, and that's what we did.
Yeah, and sometimes the White House is saying there's no way in the world we would talk to these people. Meanwhile, they're saying, hey, go talk to those people.
Right.
So... Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that is that has gone on for a long, long time, and I think sometimes it's a matter of degree. A lot of people criticize our current president for his lack of truthfulness, and of course, the Washington Post has been counting the lies, and others have been doing so, and we're up in deep into the somewhere between 10,000 and 20,000, I guess, and that seems pretty remarkable, but this kind of thing where people are essentially, you could call them lies or rhetorical sleights of hand or just one set of remarks for one audience and another set of remarks for the meeting that's really
correct.
Happening, et cetera.
Correct. So, that's correct.
Yeah, yeah. So let's focus in here a little bit and talk about the latest developments here. Of course, Iran, fired a shot across the bow of the United States last night. Would that be a fair way to describe it?
Yes. Let's take a look at this of what it is in Iran. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. In Iran, it is we stepped on the throat of the great Satan.
Uh-huh.
That's what it is in Iran.
Yeah.
Over here, President Trump says all's well. We've got the best military. We've got the best equipment in the world. A little bit different perception of them. I take the statement by the president, he's going to make a statement today, but I take that as a restraint, as sort of a pulling back. Now, the natural Facebook world and Twitter world are going to take it a little different.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to take it as, oh my goodness, the president's just not tough enough, or the president this or the president that. But I think this is just sort of a pulling back a little bit, letting it, you know, go low a little bit. We may make, I think, a precision strike somewhere, by the way. You know, not on Iranian soil for this, but we might make a precision strike at a camp in Hezbollah in Lebanon, or maybe in Syria or Iraq. And I think the Iranians will understand that. They didn't kill anybody. And our strike, probably, we won't kill anybody. And after that point in time, I think the allies, our allies are going to step in, and including China, by the way, who are saying, okay, everybody, now let's do something else here.
Yeah. I mean, do you think the United States, I mean, is there any, is the president feeling any pressure politically or in a manner of face saving and that sort of thing to make one more shot here? Or do you think that he could maintain no need to worry about that stuff and just say, we're going to call it even now?
It's hard to say what he'll do today when he speaks, but I think he will say that, you know, the Iranians, I don't think he'll say they failed in the attempt, but that we will deal with this. We're not going to take this. I think he'll make those kinds of statements today.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see the 52 sites bombed, you know, in Iran and that type of thing. I don't think we're going to see that. Now, there's a bigger problem here right now, I think, too, although this could escalate into literally a World War III, but there's a bigger problem here now that I think we really have to face. Okay, we blew up the Iranian general, the bad guy. We blew him up in Iraq, on Iraqi soil, correct?
Yeah.
The Iraqis have asked us to leave. Iranians lobbed missiles into Iraqi soil. So I think pretty soon Iraq's going to say to everybody, we're a democracy, autonomy, all of you get out. I think the Iranians are going to be on a short leash, too. We have no choice. It's a democracy. They voted to have us go. And no matter what, we don't want to be in a country where the Iraqis start trying to kill our soldiers.
Yeah, I mean, that is a very weird situation vis-a-vis just Iraq. I mean, and you're right. We have a sovereign country here where, we have two dogs in our household, a Cocker Spaniel and a Newfoundland. And they like that, they fight and they tussle and they wrestle and they do all this stuff all day, and occasionally they come over to where I'm sitting in the kitchen and they'll do so right under my feet and around my legs and stuff, mm-hmm. and I'll be like, get out of here, mm-hmm. I don't want to be part of your fight, you know, and
right.
maybe I'm in a little bit in Iraq's role right there where I'm not interested in having. Having these two antagonists invade my space, right? You know, if the United States ends up being asked to leave by Iraq and says, no, we're not leaving, that really changes the entire flavor of the U.S.-Iraqi relationship, right?
Well, it does. And the other thing it does is it changes the entire balance in the Mideast region, because you'll have China and Russia in particular, China and Russia and Iran, unless Iran makes the Iraqis angry. It's kind of funny, before this, the Iraqis were just as angry at the Iranians, and then this kind of solidified them when the general was killed. But otherwise, Russia, and when we leave, Russia, China, and Iran will be running the region. Now, what does that mean in practicality for us? Well, as far as, you know, the ego goes, it's like they're running the region. Okay, what do we want to do? Do we want to send 15,000 troops and run the region? The actual reality of it is, whether it's good or not, in the long term, they will continue to eliminate ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Because they don't like there's this fake news thing out there that Iran likes Al-Qaeda. They don't. They hate them. And they hate ISIS. So that's the one positive thing. They will continue to fight ISIS. In the long run, though, on a regional basis, you know, I don't know what that does for us when you've got Russia and China running most of the Mideast. I think it, Israel, it makes them second guess, you know, where they want to be in their strategy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's if you look at the take the longer term view here, the president, Donald Trump, from the, you know, the days on the campaign trail in 2016 was saying he wants to disentangle the United States from these endless wars in the Middle East and basically reduce our profile over there. But that does leave kind of a vacuum, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And I think we need as a country, and I believe people in Congress are going to, both sides are going to probably, if you ask them, be more acceptable to what I'm about to say. You know, defending Israel and making sure that Israel is, you know, obviously taken care of and helped is a different world than defending Saudi Arabia. And Israel in itself, of course, is the democracy of the Mideast. We're close allies in so many ways. Saudi Arabia is not an ally like Israel. You know, with Israel, they will defend us. Saudi Arabia is not one of those allies. And I think at some point in time, this cannot be, from the United States point of view, an Israel and Saudi Arabia deal. Supporting Israel is fine. Supporting Saudi Arabia may be another deal. You know, I don't think that we should get into Mideast conflicts and supporting the Saudis in Yemen, and then when the Iranians bomb a Saudi oil field, we go try to do something to the Iranians. Let the Saudis defend themselves, because at the end of the day, the Saudis are extremely unpredictable with us, and the Israelis aren't. The Israelis, you know, are friendly with us.
Well, lots of moving parts here, as usual, and I really appreciate your work here with us, Bob, in helping us sort it all out. It's valuable service, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Meanwhile, Dave from Plainfield's on the line. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. You know, your previous guest neglected to tell you that the reason we got along with Iran in 1978 is because the Shah was there.
Yeah.
The Shah was on our side.
Yes.
The Shah came to Carter. This is on record.
Mm-hmm.
The Shah came to Carter and asked him for aid, and he refused to give it to him. That's on record.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, that's how Khomeini got in there, and we've gone downhill since then. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Dave. Appreciate it. Don from Elmore is on the line. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Dave. How much are we really being told about this whole doggone affair? And I ask that because I've seen one foreign report that basically is claiming that the Saudis, of course, being at odds with the Iranians as they have been for some time, that the premier in Iraq has been trying to negotiate some kind of a peace agreement, or at least a downplay of the antics we've seen between the two, and that he had received a letter from whomever the king of Saudi Arabia is now and had called the Iranians about this, and that they sent Soleimani in there to basically see what he thought of the whole thing and go from there. And that, as I understand it, and again, this was from a foreign report, the top Iraqi general, as one might expect, was the one that met him at the airport, and that he too was killed.
I was not aware of that. That is that presents a different wrinkle on the whole thing.
I've not been able to confirm it elsewhere. But as I say, I picked that up off of one of the foreign newscasts, and I certainly wonder how much we're really being told about this whole doggone thing. That would make sense to me that if Soleimani was, then why else would he have been at the airport? You know, there's just too much not being said. And as far as the casualties last night, I don't think we ought to be saying a doggone thing, because that's just tipping the Iranians off as to what they succeeded to do or what they didn't succeed to do with their missiles.
You know, you don't think the United States was wise to say that didn't have any casualties?
I think they were wise to say that. But the question is, is that a truthful answer? That we don't know.
Well, let me, you're going to find out just how naive I really am on military stuff here and so on. But if U.S. personnel were killed in that, you're going to have body bags coming home. You're going to have funerals in various towns.
It would come out.
Yeah.
It would come out sooner or later.
Yeah.
But at the moment, we don't really know.
Yeah.
I mean, this is no different than Putin's nonsense in Syria and so forth. What you didn't know, perhaps, the chief objection he had to that, or the chief objection he received from that, were the mothers getting around the Kremlin because they didn't like their sons coming home from body bags from non-declared wars.
All right. Well, Don, thanks for the call. I think you actually, you know, you raise a good point about there being many layers to this thing, some of which are still, shall we say, subterranean. Thanks very much. Hey, let's go to Guy Page, one of the good friends of the Dave Graham Show. He's a supporter of the president, tends to approach a lot of issues from a more conservative bent. And as we say, we like to have all points of view here on the Dave Graham Show. And so let's check in with Guy this morning. Good morning, Guy. Thanks for joining me.
Glad to.
And you are over in Montpelier, I gather, this morning. You've been done.
I'm calling from the belly of the beast, the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Ooh, that's the bowel of the beast, below the belly or something. I don't know. Let's not get too anatomically here. That's
okay.
Yeah. Hey, let's focus for a moment on foreign policy. You've said on this program before, and I've seen you say this online too, that one of the things you have liked about President Trump is that he has not gotten us into oil wars. I think that was a phrase you used a couple times, I seem to recall. Have I got that right so far?
That's right.
And with
good reason. He's gotten us off the, America used to be basically this sort of like this big X-fighter, prize fighter, very personally powerful, but addicted.
Yeah.
Someone else's booze.
Else's substance, yeah. Well,
let me
ask you about this. Would it be fair to say, if we're going to use this sort of metaphor of oil wars and so on, that maybe we didn't start a new oil war? This one's been simmering for a long time with Iran and Iraq and so on.
Sure.
Last week, the president, did he throw a match at it?
Well, I would say that the other guys were desperately throwing matches, trying to get a fire started, and he basically put his foot in the matches. Having said that, there's no doubt that what he did, which is he identified the worst actor, the guy who the mastermind of all the stuff, and said, "We're taking their queen off the board," and he did. Now, when you take a queen off the board, the other parts get the other pieces in the chessboard get a little desperate. So I was very intrigued, Dave, by the tone of the Iranian comment on their rocket or their missile strikes, which is basically they use the word concluded. It was a defensive thing. And my sense of this, Dave, is that both parties are going to go, okay, walk it back. We do not want a further engagement. My sense is that's what's going to happen. I sure hope that's what happens.
Yeah, I think I share that hope with you, Guy. I mean, obviously, nobody wants any further casualties or certainly civilian deaths over there. Or, who wants a war? Everybody wants peace.
Yeah.
And a de-escalation would be the best thing that could happen here, I think.
And Dave, I'm also really glad that the president also walked back the hitting the cultural sites.
Uh-huh.
So I was thinking, first of all, from just a kind of a moral ethical point of view, how bad is that? And also, if the point is to cut off the head of the corrupt leadership, but to keep the people maybe at least not desperately angry at America, you don't want to go, blowing up the Shoba Museum and Ben and Jerry's and other things like that.
Yeah, I get you, Guy. Hey, Guy, we got to go to some CBS News at the bottom of it. Can you hang on just past the break here a little bit? I want to talk.
I have
a couple more questions for you.
Sure.
Okay, thanks. We're going to go to some CBS News, a couple words from sponsors. I'm going to be checking to see if we still have Guy Page on the line on the other side.
The Warren Store is a warm and welcoming oasis during the winter. Our wood stove is roaring, the aromas of fresh-made soups and our daily specials fill the air, the coffee is hot and the pastries are fresh. Stop by for breakfast before you hit the slopes or make us your après-ski choice to relax and refuel after a day of fun on the mountain. and we have a great selection of grab-and-go meals if you can stay and chat. But we hope that you can stick around. The Warren Store. We're funky, friendly, and almost world famous.
News Radio WDEV FM and AM. Now back to the Dave Graham Show.
We are back, and Guy Page is hanging on the line with us right through the break there. Appreciate it, Guy. And I wanted to ask you, you know, the president had a lot of chatter during the campaign and during the early part of his presidency, really, here, talking about the need to scale down the U.S. Presence in the Middle East. You know, America First meant effectively, let's pull it all in a little bit, folks, it seemed. And is that a real thing still? Has that been dropped? Is it? I mean, where are we on that?
My sense is that's always going to be a thing. That's always going to be the intent. And to some extent, it's certainly been accomplished. I mean, the whole ISIS thing is... compared to when he came into office, has been dealt with. But I think his idea, you know, I'm not on his team or anything, but I think the idea is that it needs to be from a position of getting things done and of strength, not just we're going to get the best deal we can and leave.
Yeah, well, I guess things are still very much in a state of flux. We'll have to see how the deals sure. turn out as time unfolds here. But Guy Page, thanks so much for staying with us. I just had that one more question for you. I think I'm good for now, and I appreciate you checking in with us.
No problem.
All righty. Hey, let's go to Rama in Williamstown. Rama's on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Listen, I'd like to call up and say, listen, there's a history behind all of this, and I'd be... Take your pick of whatever topic. There's a history behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And you, sometimes it's, you know, you can go back forever and ever into history. And right now, and nowadays, I think it's totally counterproductive to go back to the 1980s. I really do. But that's where Trump, McConnell, Republican, is trying to take our foreign policy with Iran. And I offer as evidence the fact that he picked out, what was the number, 52? Right?
Yeah, yep.
One for each hostage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. That was 60 years ago. It's time to start looking a little bit in a different direction. So I'm going to say, look back to history to the latest big change in our relationship with Iran. And that happened when Trump, McConnell, Republican, got elected to office. And the first thing he did was, well, not the first, but pretty darn close to the first, was tear up the budding treaty
yeah.
that we were working on with Iran, which really could have changed the direction for both of our countries in a major and extremely positive direction. So I take it from there. So if you want to go back, listen, Iran did not attack, if they attacked the oil tanker, and I'll accept that they did, that's fine. But if they attacked the oil tanker and the oil farm in Saudi Arabia, et cetera, they didn't do that out of the blue. Any
yeah.
more than people are saying this rocket attack on Soleimani was not something totally out of the blue. And so this is where this constant escalation thing keeps going, where people say, well, you know, what about what they do to us? What about did they do to us? We also have to, as being the more powerful of the two countries involved in this discussion, we have to be the ones to sit there and say, listen, what is really reasonable? Because we can absorb some punishment from them, certainly much more punishment from them than they could absorb from us in the course of life.
Yeah.
So well, I think it's important that we keep things in perspective here and who's reacting to what. I would say it was more Iran reacting to U.S. aggression than U.S. reacting to Iranian aggression. I also want to point out one of the hallmarks of Trump, Donald J. Trump, period. And if you look back to all the stuff that he did beforehand, he liked to bully people. He always liked to bully. He liked to be able to sit there and go after people that were weaker than him because he had vastly more resources to go after. What the Iranians did, they fired those missiles. They fired them from Iranian territory.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge signal. They are willing to go to war to stop us from meddling around in their home territory.
Well, earlier in the show, we were talking, I think it was Dave Lawler first from Axios.com, their world editor, and he was saying, essentially agreeing with my assessment that there may have been a little bit of punch bowling here on the part of Iran, where they have some precision weapons, but they didn't really fire very precisely last night, shall we say.
I would agree with you. I don't think they use their top-of-the-line weaponry, which also, by the way, should point out, that Balad air base is a huge air base, and if you don't think there's massive anti-missile units around there, things like Patriots, et cetera, let's understand, those rockets got through despite any defenses we had around an air base that houses planes worth hundreds of millions and sometimes even billions of dollars.
Well, did they get through, or were they shot down by these missile batteries?
Well, some of them obviously made it through. They told us that they hit the base.
Yeah, right? I mean, if you have a piece of land that is, you know, a 5,000 acres, and you call it an air base, and 4,000 of it is just empty desert, and that's where the bombs are landing, you're kind of like, well, it's a firing range maybe for today.
If you want to view it that way, you can, I guess. I would disagree with that in extremes.
I guess what I'm saying is I am not saying that's what happened, because I don't know, and I don't know that I haven't seen any reporting that goes into the level of detail about how many missiles got through and how many were intercepted.
Some made it through. That's what we, and whether they hit sand or a runway or a plane or a barracks, doesn't matter. We know for this part of it.
Yeah.
We know
yeah.
some got through. So and also this bit about them shooting down the drone. There is some technology there available for warfare from Iran that we're not being fully briefed on as a public. But it's also, I think, the bigger point, they're no longer going to sit there and hide behind the names of some other groups now.
Yeah.
They are saying, listen, this is us. We are going to respond like this. And, you know, if you come after us, we're coming after you.
All right, Rama, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Check in again soon. And the Dave Graham Show, we welcome calls from all the listeners. We've had some from a variety of spots on the political spectrum here this morning, and that's I encourage that. I would love to hear more folks calling in with views all over the place, because it's the discourse that matters here, and we want to hear all perspectives on the Dave Graham Show here at WDEV FM and AM. 244-1777 is our call-in number, and open phone line for this last little bit of the show here today, with about a quarter hour to go. The Dave Graham Show, of course, is every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. here on WDEV, a wide range of programming. We are really focusing on Iran today, because the big news broke last night that Iran had fired some missiles at U.S. military bases in Iraq. And of course, that's the kind of thing that really makes you sit up, take notice, and say, whoa, are we going to war here? Apparently there were no casualties from these missile firings that happened. And the United States, it seems as though if they wanted to, we've talked a little bit about it with a couple of our guests, there are some off ramps, and we could actually we could kind of call the thing off right now. Let's call the whole thing off, as the old song said. Let's go to Fred in New Haven and hear what he has to say. Good morning, Fred.
Yes. What I have to say is I'm tired of listening to Rama.
Okay? You're tired of listening to Rama?
I'm tired of listening to Rama.
Okay.
Let him find another radio station or give him his own show.
Well, As I was just mentioning, I like to entertain perspectives all over the map here. And, Fred, I think you've called once or twice before. Is that right, to the show?
I have.
Yep. So call more often. You know, we try to get most of the callers on the air here. It's a rare thing that I can't. And usually that happens when, you know, somebody calls at 29 after the hour and we have to go to some news at the bottom of the hour, or they call at, 10:59 and I'm about to go home for the day.
And as long as I'm on my gripe fest,
yep.
I really enjoy listening to Bob Ney and the people that used to be on. And really, when Bob comes on, I just want to listen to Bob.
Yeah, Bob's a thoughtful guy, and he's as I've mentioned before, he's had a wide variety of experiences in his life for sure, and brings a lot of perspective to the conversations that we have with him. And so I'm really glad that even if the talk media news situation we had on the show for quite a while, you know, certainly my first 18 months or so, or 20 months or whatever, of my career here, we would get somebody from Talk Media News on every day. They've kind of gone away. I'm not sure exactly whether that's even still a going concern, but they are not offering anything on a regular basis to us these days, which I consider too bad, because I not only like Bob, but I mean, they used to deliver up a guy by the name of Tom Squitieri, who was really good on this military stuff. And of course, we always were entertained by Ellen Ratner and her remarks, and others from the Talk Media News crew. I miss them. I wish they were still around, but Bob is now freelancing and is able to join us usually on Fridays. We brought him in specially today because, again, the big news breaking last night, and you know, that's just the way things unfold here. Nothing stays forever, and so we try to roll with the punches. But Fred, you know, I'm always happy to take tips and comments from listeners about, you know, the overall course of this show here too. So I'm glad to get a little customer feedback, shall we say. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome.
All righty. Let's go to Paul in Moncton. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Dave. Hey, just some comments quickly before you have to go to our president's speech here.
Yep.
We've gotten this. First of all, regarding a lot of the protesters there, the reality is many of those people have to, you know, after the death and the funeral, were actually there not by choice. They're there because they know if they don't show up, that may give back to people in power that may not be happy with them for not showing up and honoring this man. They do it in some cases out of fear more than as an honoring the gentleman who they managed to kill. The idea that Trump did this as an off-the-cuff kind of a response, that's not necessarily true. And the president's last couple of years have been looking to get a hold of this guy outside of Iran, and they had the opportunity to do so by not firing the missile on Iran. So in that case, I think there was a reason why he chose this moment to do it, and I think the military commanders understand that. My concerns are what next? The reality is we've shown them that we can get people who target specifically who are a problem, but Iran's not going to stop doing what they're trying to do. They're trying to protect their region, their area, and trying to be the major power. And they're going to continue by proxy to go after any nation, whether it be us, Russia, or China, if we're in their way. So, unfortunately, I'm wondering what next. And then finally, a comment. I agreed a little bit with what Obama said. I was a little concerned about his comment about absorbing punishment. If absorbing punishment means the death of your child, can we really afford to do that? I didn't find that to be, that concerned me to be so cavalier about it. Maybe he didn't mean it that way, but it comes across that the punishment can be the loss of life. And loss of a human, or in this case, American, if it's your child, is not going to be something we can afford to do. So,
yeah, I think that is a worthwhile point there in terms of, and I do think, you know, what that goes to is that there is, in a lot of discussions about issues of war and peace, people tend to forget about the real human impacts of these things. We had a guy calling the other day from Northfield, a Vietnam veteran who'd battled for much of his life, it sounds like, with effects of Agent Orange exposure. And, you know, he was just part of the cannon fodder that used to be talked about in Pentagon briefings with Defense Secretary McNamara.
I remember that conversation I had with him, and here home, because I had uncles who fought in Vietnam and in Korea, and it is. And it's, you know, war is never the answer. Unfortunately, we tend to move towards it. So
and speak about it awfully abstractly at times. I think
absolutely.
That, Hey, Paul, thanks. We have a caller on the line. Let's go to Bruce in Essex. Good morning, Bruce.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Well, first of all, before a little bit of history, I love listening to Rama. I love listening to Guy Page and most of your callers. And, Bob Ney is a treat because that guy's really turned his life around.
Yeah.
I remember him in Congress, reading about it. I don't think I was working when he was there.
Yeah.
But as a historian, I don't want to discount history. And just let me tell you, I was working on the Hill when in the last days of the Shah.
Mm-hmm.
He came to Washington.
Give us the years you have in mind here right now.
Well, during Jimmy Carter's term, okay around 76, 77, 78.
You're in Washington. You're working for Bob Stafford?
John Anderson of Illinois.
Okay.
And the Shah came up to Capitol Hill amid enormous protests by Iranian students in the United States and others. Enormous, trailed by a fire engine, an ambulance, and a lot of the firemen were wearing like asbestos or foil suits because they were afraid of firebombs. There were snipers on the roof of the Rayburn office building, and I know that because I stuck my head out the window from my office building across the street, and one of them looked at me in binoculars. But the intense opposition to the Shah, of course, who was put in place by the United States in a coup when they overturned Mossadegh or something like that. So it was an amazing time to be on the Hill, amazing time to watch, to observe Iran and all that stuff. And we have to understand that history, and we have to deal with it, and we have to look at it. And I don't know if I'll even listen to Trump. I hope there is a pullback. I just don't trust anything the guy says, but I may. But just, I love your, I love so many of your callers, and I learn a lot most of the time.
Well, that's great, Bruce. I really appreciate you saying that because, you know, I know some of the callers probably don't like, you know, the content of the other callers' remarks or whatever from time to time. But, you know, one of the things I encourage here in this little forum we have here via the radio every morning is just folks, you want to be civil. You want to listen to the other people and hear what they have to say and see if there's anything from what they have to say you want to incorporate into your own thinking. Obviously, it's a good forum for debate where you're trying to persuade other people to think the way you do. And you know, life goes on. I do think that there are, and I'll tell you, I mean, people ask me, you know, sometimes I hear just on the street, you know, people, I was listening to your show, and how do you stay patient with all these callers? And I say, it's fine. I have no problem with that at all. I mean,
well, my wife tells me all the time I have to listen more. And by the way, Dave, another reason why I like you, we used to have a Newfie.
They
we've got two little Bichons, a big contrast, but I loved our Newfie. So
yeah, they are great dogs, and I'll tell you our situation with the Newfie and the Cocker Spaniel, very different personalities. They are absolutely hilarious together. We have a rolling comedy show around our household these days. So it's
gentle giants.
Yeah, so. they're sweet dogs. I could stand a little less slobber. You know,
we've got what we call wainscoting on our walls and some of our paintings 20 years later.
So. Yeah, you can still tell that you had a Newfie. Yeah. Yikes. Yeah. All right. Hey, Bruce, thanks for the call.
Bye.
Yep, take care. All right, we are coming up on, 10:56? Wow, just a couple of minutes to go here. Maybe time for squeezing a couple more calls before we go to the end of the show, and then a special CBS News report here. We're going to be getting some remarks from President Donald Trump in just a few minutes here, live on WDEV FM and AM. Here's another thing.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Scheduling being what it is in Washington, we're going to go with CBS News at the top of the hour and join when the president is in the room.
When the president is in the room, okay.
That's what it looks like right now. Okay. We'll keep you posted.
So in other words, we're saying the president may not be on right at 11.
Well, we'll start with CBS News and we'll go to the president when he's there.
All right, that sounds like a plan. And that'll be coming on at 11 o'clock. We'll go to CBS regardless, as we normally would at the top of the hour. That's what we do here at WDEV. And by the way, just while I'm on that subject, I've got to say we've been very, very happy with our partnership with CBS News since we joined them sometime in the last, how long have we been? About a year? Yeah, they have done they're really excellent. Yeah,
come to think of it, it's closer to 2 years now.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know about you, Dana, but they have a sort of old school approach.
Yeah, they do.
Real solid, just straight ahead news, and that is a good kind of anchor for the overall approach we take here at WDEV, where occasionally we express views here, but we certainly have them from, you know, many different spots on the political spectrum, and we do try to make sure that folks are able to be talking with us and not be shy. That's a very important thing. So, all right. Let's see. Time for one more call. If somebody wants to check in at 244-1777, and we're always interested in hearing what our listeners have to say. And if you haven't called the Dave Graham Show, don't be shy. I don't bite your head off. We have many people here who call repeatedly, some multiple times a week, and they're doing just fine. They're surviving the surviving the experience pretty well, from what I can tell. So it's something where I encourage, you know, the broader range of callers we can get on here. Love to hear from more women out there. That would be a great thing on the Dave Graham Show and here on WDEV. And speaking of which, we have Lisa Senecal and Carrie Brown from the Vermont Commission on Women joining us in the studio tomorrow morning to talk about some issues that they're dealing with. We'll be, I'm sure, enjoying that conversation. And let's see, we are down to about 30 seconds left. We do have another caller on the line, but I don't think we can do this because it's just, we're too short for time, folks, I'm sorry to say. But hey, Dean from Waitsfield, perhaps you can check in with us tomorrow and tell us what's on your mind. We happy to hear from you anytime, but we do have to go to a fairly well for the day. So that's about it for the Dave Graham Show on WDEV FM and AM on this Wednesday morning. And we'll tune in again tomorrow, 9:05. We'll be bringing you another program as we do every morning from about 9-ish to about 11-ish. Have a great day, everybody. Talk soon. Bye.